Count Alexander Ilyich Rostov is under house arrest in the Metropole Hotel in Amor Towles' best-selling novel, A Gentleman in Moscow. The house arrest in this particular hotel is quite rich. There's an entire world inside the Metropole, and Rostov meets with all the regular guests and the long-term lodgers and the staff. And when he is still a young man, he meets Nina Kulikova, a precocious 9-year-old who is obsessed with the aristocracy and the rules and etiquette of being a princess. The Count is happy to explain these things to her, and they begin their unusual friendship. After telling a story about how real royalty behaves, he pauses to point out that she should be saying please and thank you to the servers in the restaurant where they are having tea. And Towles writes, Nina eyed the Count with an expression of seasoned tolerance, and then presumably for his benefit spoke a little more slowly. I understand that a princess should say please if she is asking for a cake, because she is trying to convince someone to give her the cake. And I suppose if having asked for a cake, she is given a cake, then she has reason to say thank you. But in the second part of your example, the princess in question didn't ask for the cake. She was offered it. And I see no reason why she should have to say thank you when she is merely obliging someone by accepting what they've offered. To punctuate her point, Nina put a lemon tartlet in her mouth. I concede that there is some merit to your argument, said the Count, but I can only tell you from a life of experience that, and Nina cut him off with a wave of her finger, but you have just said that you are quite young. Indeed, I am. Well, then, it seems to me that your claim of a life of experience may be premature. Yes, thought the Count, as this tea was making perfectly clear. I shall work upon my posture, Nina said quite definitively, brushing the crumbs from her fingers, and I will be sure to say please and thank you whenever I ask for things. But I have no intention of thanking people for things I never asked for in the first place. Poor, young, privileged Nina saw no reason to be grateful for things she never asked for. Nina failed to see that life itself is a gift. And a gift is certainly something for which to be thankful. Gratitude has nothing to do with what you ask for or what you want, and everything to do with grace. The way Nina sees it, gratitude is transactional. I ask for this, you give it to me, I say thank you. It's quid pro quo, something for something. But if gratitude is about grace, then it should be something for nothing. Did you know that there was a time in history when gratitude was not a free response? It was the law. The way it worked then, a ruler would give a gift to the people, and the people would, in turn, be expected to give back to the ruler. And this is known as reciprocity. That's the way things worked. Someone does something for you, and then you do something for them in return. That part isn't stuck in ancient times, though, is it? There may not be the legal requirement for gratitude, but when someone does something nice for us, we feel the obligation to do something nice for them. Our response, what we give in return, reflects our appreciation to the giver, and we have been taught that that is the proper response. That's what the Count tried to convince Nina of, that gratitude is at least the polite, well-mannered thing to do. But when gratitude was the law, ingratitude, the failure to respond, was considered a violation of the law and is still considered a violation of social norms. That kind of gratitude is transactional. It is based on quid pro quo. I do something for you, so you must do something for me. It has everything to do with I have to, I must, I am required. It has little to do with feelings such as joy, love, or appreciation. See, the good news is Jesus disconnects the structure of quid pro quo or transactional gratitude from the possibility of payback by putting the blessing that you receive so far in the future that it becomes irrelevant to the act of giving the gift. Diana Butler Bass argues that gratitude must be pro bono or for the good of all and given with no strings attached. Gratefulness is a form of grace to be given and received with nothing expected in return. If gratitude is understood as a form of grace rather than a pyramid of transactions, if gratitude is understood to exist within God's creation of abundance where, as Wendell Berry says, everything we need is here, the moral issue becomes, how do we pass this gift around with no expectation of return to make sure that everyone is fed and everyone is cared for and that everyone has access to the good gifts of all creation? How do we steward those gifts rather than how do we control their distribution? Gratitude is the doorway into a universe of grace and gift. So how do we continue the work that God has started in us? Paul's letter to the Philippian church begins with words of gratitude and grace. I thank my God every time I mention you in my prayers. I'm thankful for all of you every time I pray. As it turns out, it was common practice at the time to begin letters with thanksgiving. That is true, and for Paul, thanksgiving was theologically central and essential. It is not just proper etiquette, but also a deep conviction. He begins his letter with an acknowledgement of grace. May the grace and peace of God be with you. And then the clear response to that grace is gratitude. I thank my God. Grace and gratitude were so central to Paul's theology that he sometimes used the same word for both grace and gratitude. The two words go together. When it comes from God to us, it is grace. And when it comes from us to God, it is gratitude. The words gratitude and grace come from the same root word, and that word in Latin is gratia, meaning favor, regard, or goodwill, and it is a direct translation of the Greek word charis. Bass likes to think of grace with an image of God tossing gifts around, a sort of indiscriminate giver of sustenance, joy, love, and pleasure. Grace, gifts given without being earned and with no expectation in return, is as the old hymn says, amazing. Because you can neither earn nor pay back the gift, your heart fills with gratitude. And the power of that emotion transforms the way you see the world and experience life. She says, grace begets gratitude, which in turn widens our hearts toward greater goodness and love. Thankfulness is a feeling in response to gifts. Grace reminds us that every good thing is a gift, whether we asked for it or wanted it. Somehow the rising of the sun and being alive are indiscriminate gifts from God to us. Elie Wiesel said, every hour is grace. So when we are full of grace, we are grateful. When we are grateful, we are full of grace. We know, though, that we don't always feel grateful. We don't always feel full of grace. So sometimes we just have to choose to give thanks and act in accordance with grace anyway. Paul's letter and his use of charis shows us that giving and receiving really are so much alike that one word can define both. In this short passage from the beginning of the letter, Paul writes that he is grateful for two things, remembrance of the congregation and their partnership. In the NRSV translation, verse 3 reads, I thank my God every time I remember you. And then in verse 5, he is thankful for the church in Philippi sharing in the gospel from the first day until now. Even if you know little of the Apostle Paul's life, you know it wasn't an easy one. First, a persecutor of Christians and then a proclaimer of Christ. He traveled and helped establish communities of faith. He also got thrown in jail a lot. And then there was that thorn in his side, whatever that was. But still, in circumstances when Paul should have doubt, despair, and bitterness, he chooses gratitude. He remembers, and he is grateful. Paul is grateful that the Philippian Christians are partners in the ministry of the gospel. Interestingly, the Greek word translated here as partners is koinonia. That may be one of the few Greek words that you know. It's a word that Paul uses throughout the letter, and the word in its most wooden translation means to have in common. But we find it translated in different ways depending on what it is that is being shared, whether they're sharing money or suffering, work or grace. But the most common translation we find, the one you all probably know, is fellowship. But it's Fred Craddock's view that the word fellowship does not carry much freight after so much misuse and overuse. He says, "For the church today to announce a meeting for the purpose of fellowship is in essence to promise all attending that there will be no serious business, no worship, and no work. Given the degeneration of language, one has to say something different in order to mean the same thing. Koinonia is serious business, though. It is about what the community has in common. It is about partnership. Paul is grateful for the partnership and ministry he is in with the Philippians. And as he reminds us at the beginning of this letter, that partnership is grounded in the grace they have in common. This little piece of the letter comes full circle as Paul looks beyond the particular time and the particular people to the God whose own good work the church is. Paul is confident that the one who started the work of grace in Philippi will not abandon it in a state of incompleteness. Paul is confident in God's commitment to bring this to completion, and his confidence is grounded in the grace of Jesus Christ. Friends, we get to be partners in ministry. And this partnership, this fellowship, this koinonia, is rooted in grace. Grace is given to us without our asking and without our expectation of quid pro quo or getting something back in return. What else can we do in response to this grace but give thanks? Thanks for something we never asked for. Thanks for something we didn't know we needed. Thanks because we could never earn or achieve it on our own. Even though grace is given with nothing expected in return, we can still be grateful. We can still find ways to steward and share the gifts we have been given, not because it is the law, not for quid pro quo, not to prevent something bad from happening, not so that something good might happen, but because something good has already happened. That's the good news of grace, that we are grateful for and that we get to share. When we are full of grace, we are grateful. When we are grateful, we are full of grace. May it be so. Amen.